KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Folsom, California.
Noe Valley.
Village in the Park in Daly City.
Potrero Hill.
Coming up, we'll hear the latest updates on the devastating fires in the North Bay.
Officials are reporting that 550 homes and 21 commercial buildings have been destroyed.
A report from the scene. Then we'll hear about a letter writing process that's helping people prepare for death, say goodbye, and grieve after a loved one has passed.
I've learned that everybody has a letter in them. I've learned that there's great solace in putting that to writing. There is nothing like hearing someone's voice that you love at a time when you can no longer hear it.
The original documentary, Lasting Letters, Leaving a Legacy Behind, today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. First, we're joined by KALW's news director, Ben Trefney, for a Bay Area headline.
Since late Sunday night, an estimated 17 different fires have been devastating several counties in Northern California, including Sonoma, Napa, and Mendocino. At least 15 people have died, 1,500 structures have been destroyed, and land equivalent to more than three times the size of San Francisco has burned. One area that suffered a lot of damage is the city of Santa Rosa. Two hospitals were evacuated, and entire neighborhoods, including Fountain Grove and Coffee Park, have been totally destroyed. KALW's Nina Gensler-Debs is up in Santa Rosa. And Nina, what's it like up there right now?
Well, the first thing you notice, even from miles away, is that it is very, very smoky. After just a few hours here, I'm starting to feel it in my throat. You might hear me sniffle a little bit. A lot of people are walking around with surgical masks or bandanas around their face. You can see ashes drifting through the air almost everywhere you go. It's all over my car. Driving around, you notice most businesses are closed, power is out in some places, and roads are blocked off, preventing people from going to some of the more badly damaged neighborhoods.
So you're there in Santa Rosa right now. Do we know yet which fire in the North Bay has caused the most damage?
Yeah, the fire that's really decimated parts of Santa Rosa is the Tubbs Fire, which firefighters are still struggling to contain at all, as I understand it. As of this morning, officials are reporting that 550 homes and 21 commercial buildings have been destroyed in the city, but that number could still grow. 9 of the 15 people who are reported killed by these fires have died in this fire, the Tubbs Fire.
Where are people going to find safety?
Yeah, there are a number of evacuation centers or shelters open in Sonoma, Napa, and Mendocino counties, and there are 5 within Santa Rosa itself. I visited one of them at the Finley Community Center earlier this morning.
A lot of faces, a lot of time.
Yeah, there's a lot of people running around for sure, yeah.
Usually this is a community center with a bunch of different rooms. It hosts a church, classes for kids, and other community events. But now, each room is filled with people charging their phones or sleeping in cots or sitting in a makeshift dining hall.
And then yesterday, of course, we sort of ramped up this shelter and we had 700 people for breakfast. And then last night we had, about 250 clients spend the night with us.
That's Roy Pitts. He's one of the shelter managers at this location. The shelter offers food, a place to sleep, some basic medical services, and mental health services, too. He shows me around some of the common areas of the center. There are a lot of senior citizens, a lot of people trying to get their phones to work because service is pretty unreliable all over town.
A separate room for single women, single men, families, that sort of thing. We had two convalescent homes that were evacuated the first night, and so they came with all their caregivers, and we set them up in special cots for accessibility.
Charles Thompson is one of the evacuees staying at this center. He did not get a mandatory evacuation notice, but he described seeing flames approaching as he drove away from his house.
There was an avenue of flame several hundred yards along with the fires on both sides of the road, burning quite high, 50, 60 feet high. With the spot fires behind me, I didn't feel like I could really stop, so I drove on through the flames and made it out okay.
Thompson tells me he has people he can stay with, but because of road closures, he can't get to them right now. He says he's waiting to make a plan until he knows for sure whether or not his place was destroyed. His landlord tells him that the houses next door are gone, for sure, but it's still unclear whether his place survived.
You know, reality hasn't quite set in yet. If I have lost everything, I'm not sure what I'm going to do about it at this stage. I'll just have to play it by ear as I go through it.
Thompson is far from the only one waiting on information. Communication has been problematic and chaotic up here.
Cell phone has been a big challenge, just so everybody knows that.
That's Amy Head. She's a fire captain and spokesperson for CAL FIRE.
Cell phone and internet connections. I know there are people all over the place that are out of internet. Their gas is turned off. They're out of electricity. So we're all dealing with that.
All right. Nina, so what else can people do to find more information right now?
People can go to the CAL FIRE website, fire.ca.gov, and their Facebook and Twitter feeds have the latest information on incidents across the state, or at least as fast as they can get it up there. People in Santa Rosa can go to the city's emergency website to find out what areas are under evacuation orders or where fires are active, where to find shelters, and numbers and websites for things like missing persons. Also, local station KZST at 100.1 FM is live 24 hours a day, taking calls, relaying information, so you can tune in there too.
All right, so 100.1 FM for 24-hour access for people who need information. So for people who are not in the areas immediately affected by the fire, how can they help?
Well, if you want to come and volunteer, Red Cross is doing trainings at the Doubletree Hotel in Rohnert Park. You can find more info about that at the Emergency City website. And, of course, you can always donate there. Many of the shelters have been inundated with supplies. When I was at Finley, I saw a parade of people carrying in water and pet food and board games and toiletries. But I'd recommend looking online or calling directly the various shelters. I've seen Facebook call-outs for various supplies, so that's a good place to start.
Thank you so much for your reporting, Nina.
No problem. Thanks, Ben.
You can find more information about the fire and the relief efforts at KALW.org.
That's KALW's news director, Ben Trefney. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Writing letters to loved ones before death isn't a new phenomenon. But recently, Stanford Medicine, home of Stanford Medical School, has formalized the process to help people communicate. Through the Stanford Letter Project, people can move through specific topics like apology, forgiveness, and acknowledgement. Here to bring you this story today is Jeremy Jew. He's a recent graduate of our audio academy and has a very personal reason for wanting to learn more about these legacy letters.
Recently, I found an old family video of my dad teaching me how to put ornaments on our Christmas tree.
Let's put the Santa up a little higher near this nice ornament here. Hook Santa on right over on this one here.
I'm wearing Superman pajamas, and it looks like I must be about 3 years old. I'm struggling a bit, but my dad is patient.
Oh, I don't find it.
Yeah, I'll get a hand with it. All right, now, let's put one of these big old guys.
The video reminds me of how when I was in preschool, my dad used to draw pictures of my favorite superheroes, and then leave them for me to color in when he dropped me off. In this way, he would refocus my attention and make me feel like he was nearby, even after he was gone. That's something I don't have anymore. My dad died 5 years ago, and I've managed my grief by staying busy. I picked up more work and did things that before I had never even considered, like skydiving and running a marathon. I just wanted to feel something different than what I was feeling. I thought that as long as I kept moving, as long as I was productive, I could keep myself and my emotions in check. And for a while, that worked, until I realized I was just becoming numb. I knew I needed to do something different, but I didn't know what. So when I heard about Stanford's letter writing project, of course I wanted to learn more. The process helps participants acknowledge death in a way that I hadn't, and I wanted to know how or if that helped. The Stanford Letter Project provides a template with 7 life review tasks. for people to think about and fill out. It's available in 8 different languages, in print, online, and as an app.
So we printed out the letter online.
Michael Richardson is a Stanford medical student who printed out the template for his 87-year-old grandmother and got his family talking. I spoke with Michael and his grandma, who he calls by the Chinese word pawpaw, on the day she gave him her letter. They were at her house in Los Angeles.
My name is Loretta M. Kong.
Yeah, and I'm Michael Richardson, and I received a legacy letter from my grandmother.
Yeah, I did. It was kind of tough to write it because some of the questions I never asked myself, and I have to, you know, really think thoroughly how to answer. I try my best.
All right, life review task 3, asking for forgiveness. And you say, I'm very sorry that I can be impatient on some occasion. I would try hard to be more patient, and I want to ask for forgiveness. Well, I don't think you're impatient.
Sometimes I am. I think with your uncle and your mom, mm-hmm. I'm trying to be strict, try to encourage them, study. So I can't get upset if they're not doing the way I like them to. And actually, that wasn't the best thing. I could have them better.
Mm-hmm. Were there any times when you were like in the hospital the last couple years where you had thought about having any sort of like end of life wishes or anything in writing?
No, I didn't think about writing. Uh-huh. I'm just a person really hard to express myself. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I did that. That's the way I'm. I wish I can improve a little bit.
Well, it doesn't have to end like now. Just because you wrote it doesn't mean that it's like set in stone. It's something we can still talk about. And
oh, sure.
If you ever want to like add things or think
that
about it.
That would be a good idea. Yeah. That's a very good suggestion.
Yeah. Love you, Papa.
I love you, too. I love you all so much.
Sometimes I go searching for that kind of exchange with my dad. I'll scroll through old texts, search emails, watch old family videos, or listen to saved voicemails.
Hey, Jay. See, left me a message that you need the number for the car guy. What's up with the van? I was just wondering if there's something I could help with.
It really doesn't need to be much. A quick check-in is sometimes all I can handle. Because while it's nice to see him in those videos, read his words, or hear his voice, it's also a reminder that he's no longer here. And that emptiness, that grief, can be overwhelming at times.
Thanks, Jay. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Okay. Take care. Love you. Bye.
It's hard not to wonder, if my father and I had written letters like Michael and his grandma, would we have gotten to know each other better? I know it would have been difficult for me to introduce, and a little awkward, but I like to think it would have been worth it. It was for Matthew Schoen. He's another Stanford medical student, and he did research on the letter project.
I was talking to patients, and the things they tell you, the things they share just are incredible. And I realized, like, these are conversations I should be having with my own family.
Matt's just 27, but he wrote his own letter to his brothers and parents.
What I tried to do is I tried to imagine myself, like, sitting in a hospital bed or sitting at home and knowing that I had, like, 2 minutes and what I'd tell them.
I met up with Matt and his mom, Lynn, to hear Matt's letter and how it impacted their family.
To Mark and Connor, my brothers. Mark, I am very proud of you for finding out who you are, feeling confident in being that person, and in the process, making those around you better people.
I've always wanted my children to be close and stick together and realize the value of one another. So kind of hearing all that, I just kind of felt full of love and gratitude at the moment. Just wanted to hold him and, just keep him with me and keep him safe.
to Mom and Dad. Thank you for always allowing your kids to grow and develop into whoever they want to be. You only encouraged, never pushed, and you always had our back.
Thank you also for making such an incredible home. Home is special to me. That place is magical. I want to thank you very much for everything you have done for me. It became clear to me that I knew that he felt loved all his life, which is something hugely important to me. It was kind of a reminder to everybody about how important it is that we let each other know that.
This past year, I lost two of my grandparents. They were getting sick around the time that I wrote this letter, and I think in the past we would have kind of just tried to stay positive and optimistic and almost ignored what was coming. But having shared the letter, having the conversation of end of life and legacy and what matters to you being like in the forefront, we were able to talk about what Grammy or Grandma may have wanted towards the end, or how we could help them, or share stories about their memories and what mattered to them. And I think that's a big thing for it. It's like this letter makes death or the conversation about death less intimidating.
You're listening to Lasting Letters, Leaving a Legacy Behind, a radio documentary produced by KALW reporter Jeremy Jew. Now back to the show.
When my dad was sick, my sister Sierra and I took care of him. But we never talked about him dying. Even now, saying it feels uncomfortable. Instead, we focused on his appointments and his physical comfort, never really checking in on our feelings or acknowledging the situation for what it was. Deep down, I think we knew he was going to die, but we couldn't process it because processing meant that we were accepting it, and we weren't ready for that. Still now, I feel guilty for all the times that I could have spent with my dad, but chose to do something else instead. I wish that I'd shown my appreciation for all the times he put me first. Like when our family would visit our cabin in Washington State, he'd drive all night so that the rest of us could sleep. When he first found out about his cancer, he called me to check in to see how I was doing. But he didn't mention that he was in the hospital and that they were running tests to find out what was wrong. At the time, I was angry that he wasn't open. But now, I see it was his way of protecting me. Also, I know it was hard for him to express himself, the same way it is for me. I get wrapped up in my thoughts and stumble over my words. A lot of times I feel overwhelmed and don't know where to start.
Ah, you must be Frisch.
I am.
Frisch.
Hi, Jeremy.
Jeremy.
Nice
pleasure.
To meet you.
Luckily, there are volunteers like Frisch Brandt who offer their time to help others find the words they're looking for.
The conversation is always there in terms of our mortality, but we aren't always listening to it. My name is Frisch Brandt, and I am a letter midwife. I help people write all kinds of letters. When we're in conversation, we hear some things, we don't hear others. A letter is something that we can go back to, like a book, time and time again, and meet it with who we are at that moment.
Hi, I'm Kelsey Crow, and I'm working with Frisch Brandt.
Kelsey is an author, speaker, and cancer survivor who wanted to write her legacy letter while she's still in good health.
She's helping me identify important bits of my heart and thinking that I can pass on to people who love me, bits that I may not have recognized as being so valuable, but they are.
So tell me what you are thinking.
It's hard for parents to talk about dying when they're well. On the one hand, well, you know.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's a real missed opportunity when you wait until you're truly sick.
When you're working on your letter alone and you're, you know, you can get distracted, you're looking at how the words go together. But when there's somebody else and you're in dialogue, it takes a different cadence. Who in your life has played a very important role? This is just an unearthing process.
My husband, yeah. Mike. He's very kind. He's very empathetic. Looks at other people's point of view. Each year I find him more attractive as he grays and stuff. I love it.
What do you want him to know?
I want him to know that he can do this and that I have such faith.
The letter doesn't come out whole on the half shell. It comes out in pieces and then we repuzzle it together like clay. Okay, so this is how it goes. I'll read this, knowing that it's a work in progress. The first time you hear it, it's one thing, and the second time it's something else. Feel free to flesh out any parts. Mike, we are such an integral part of each other's lives. I've learned so much from you. I want you to believe in yourself like I do.
You've done so much to help me actualize my potential. I want that for you, however it comes. I wanted to do this when I was clear-eyed and hopeful. And just imagining the future without me feels more positive for having done this.
I've learned that everybody has a letter in them. I've learned that there's great solace and maybe joy in putting that to writing, putting it to paper. And there is nothing like hearing someone's voice that you love and being able to hear it at a time when you can no longer hear it.
When I hear Frisch say that, I think, that's it. I started this radio story because I wanted that kind of letter. I wanted to hear my dad's voice again. I asked my sister Sierra to come over and help me go through some of his things.
Do you want to look at paper stuff? What do you want to look at?
Well, can we listen to some of the recordings you found first?
We looked at pictures, watched old family videos, and talked about our dad.
He was like a problem solver. Like, he wanted to hear about our problems, not like our emotional problems, but like our like car problems, our like cell phone problems, and like fix them.
And I talked about my regrets.
I want to understand him more. Does that make sense? It's not that he's a mystery to me so much, but I want to know him better, and I can't.
Yes, totally. But I don't think us not knowing him better is on us.
I asked her if she believed, like me, that a letter from one of us could have helped start a conversation. What she told me caught me completely off guard.
I wrote Dad a letter.
When he was sick?
Yeah, and he didn't... He never talked to me about the letter.
The whole time, I had imagined that if only I had written a letter, we would have had this great conversation. But of course, it wouldn't have been like that. My sister had tried, and my dad didn't respond. The thing is, Sierra didn't have the same expectations as me.
I thought that he would acknowledge it and let me know that he got it and he read it, but I didn't expect him to write me back. So I think that it was good for me because I know that he heard things that I never actually verbally said, and I know that he knows or knew, but it didn't start a conversation. So you could have written one and he would have read it, but I don't think that he would have responded.
My sister found peace in the act of writing. I think that learning about legacy letters, meeting Michael and his grandma, Matt and Lynn, Frisch and Kelsey, all of that has helped me start processing my grief. Just talking about my dad, unpacking his things and my feelings has been good. And I guess, in a way, this radio story is my legacy letter to my dad. Because one of the things I've learned is that finding that peace, it's not really about receiving a legacy letter or writing one in the hopes of getting a certain kind of response. It's about making sure you say the things you want to. I'm Jeremy Ju for Cross Currents.
You've been listening to Lasting Letters, Leaving a Legacy Behind, an original documentary produced by KELW reporter Jeremy Ju and edited by Lisa Morehouse. You can learn more about the Stanford Letter Project or Frisch Brandt's letter writing service by visiting our website, kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. The Cross Currents team includes Raquel Maria Dillon, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Christine Nguyen, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Stephen Short, Jackie Sajiko, Lilia Vega, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Freddie Roulette. You can experience his music on Thursday when he appears at the Saloon in North Beach. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.